Welcome back to A Year of War and Peace, the podcast where we go from War and Peace Zero to War and Peace Hero in 1 year flat. Do you have the Hemingway list books ready to go, your Stephen Crane books? If you don't, head to thehemingwaylist.com and have a look for the link that says Our Official Paperbacks. You can also find a link to the paperbacks in the description for this episode. Today's chapter is Epilogue 2, Chapter 6. Only the expression of the will of the deity, not dependent on time, can relate to a whole series of events occurring over a period of years or centuries, and only the deity, independent of everything, can by his soul will determine the direction of humanity's movement. But man acts in time and himself takes part in what occurs. Reinstating the first condition omitted, that of time, we see that no command can be executed without some preceding command having been given, rendering the execution of the last command possible. No command ever appears spontaneously, or itself covers a whole series of occurrences, but each command follows from another, and never refers to a whole series of events, but always to one moment only of an event. When, for instance, we say that Napoleon ordered armies to go to war, we combine, in one simultaneous expression, a whole series of consecutive commands dependent on one another. Napoleon could not have commanded an invasion of Russia, and never did so. Today he ordered such and such papers to be written to Vienna, to Berlin, and to Petersburg. Tomorrow such and such decrees and orders to the army, the fleet, the commissariat, and so on and so on. Millions of commands which formed a whole series corresponding to a series of events which brought the French armies into Russia. If throughout his reign Napoleon gave commands concerning an invasion of England, and expended on no other undertaking so much time and effort, and yet during his whole reign never once attempted to execute that design, but undertook an expedition into Russia, with which country he considered it desirable to be in alliance, a conviction he repeatedly expressed, this came about because his commands did not correspond to the course of events in the first case, but did so in the latter. For a command to be certainly executed, it is necessary that a man should command what can be executed. But to know what can and what cannot be executed is impossible, not only in the case of Napoleon's invasion of Russia, in which millions participated, but even in the simplest event, for in either case millions of obstacles may arise to prevent its execution. Every command executed is always one of an immense number of unexecuted. All the impossible commands, inconsistent with the course of events, remain unexecuted. Only the possible ones get linked up with a consecutive series of commands corresponding to a series of events, and are executed. Our false conception that an event is caused by a command which precedes it is due to the fact that when the event has taken place, and out of thousands of others, those few commands which were consistent with that event have been executed, we forget about the others that were not executed because they could not be. Apart from that, the chief source of our error in this matter is due to the fact that in the historical accounts, a whole series of innumerable, diverse and petty events, such as all those which led the French armies to Russia, for instance, is generalized into one event in accord with the result produced by that series of events, and corresponding with this generalization, the whole series of commands is also generalized into a single expression of will. We say that Napoleon wished to invade Russia and invaded it. In reality, in all Napoleon's activity, we never find anything resembling an expression of that wish, but find a series of commands, or expressions of his will, very variously and indefinitely directed. of an innumerable series of unexecuted commands of Napoleon's. One series for the campaign of 1812 was carried out, not because those orders differed in any way from the other unexecuted orders, but because they coincided with the course of events that led the French army into Russia, just as in stencil work this or that figure comes out. Not because the colour was laid on from this side or in that way, but because it was laid on from all sides over the figure cut in the stencil. So that examining the relation in time of the commands to the events, we find that a command can never be the cause of the event, but that a certain definite dependence exists between the two. To understand in what this dependence consists, it is necessary to reinstate another omitted condition of every command proceeding not from the deity but from a man, which is that the man who gives the command himself takes part in the event. This relation of the command to those he commands is just what is called power. This relation consists in the following. For common action, people always unite in certain combinations in which, regardless of the difference of the aims set for the common action, the relation between those taking part in it is always the same. Men uniting in these combinations always assume such relation towards one another, that the larger number take a more direct share, and that the smaller number a less direct share, in the collective action for which they have combined. Of all the combinations in which men unite for collective action, one of the most striking and definite examples is an army. Every army is composed of lower ranks of the service, the rank and file, of whom there are always the greatest number. Of the next higher military rank, corporals and non-commissioned officers, of whom there are fewer than of the former, and of still higher officers, of whom there are still fewer, and so on to the highest military command, which is concentrated in one person. A military organization may be quite correctly compared to a cone, of which the base with the largest diameter consists of the rank and file. The next higher and smaller section of the cone consists of the next higher grades of the army, and so on to the apex, the point of which will represent the commander-in-chief. The soldiers, of whom there are the most, form the lower section of the cone and its base. The soldier himself does the stabbing, hacking, burning, and pillaging, and always receives orders for those actions from men above him. He himself never gives an order. The non-commissioned officers, of whom there are fewer, perform the action itself less frequently than the soldiers, but they already give commands. An officer still less often acts directly himself, but commands still more frequently. A general does nothing but command the troops, indicates the objective, and hardly ever uses a weapon himself. The commander-in-chief never takes direct part in the action himself, but only gives general orders concerning the movement of the mass of the troops. A similar relation of people to one another is seen in every combination of men for common activity, in agriculture, trade, and even every administration. And so, without particularly analysing all the contiguous sections of a cone and of the ranks of an army, or the ranks and positions in any administrative or public business whatever, from the lowest to the highest, we see a law by which men to take associated action combine in such relations that the more directly they participate in performing the action, the less they can command and the more numerous they are. While the less their direct participation in the action itself, the more they command and the fewer of them there are, rising in this way from the lowest ranks to the man at the top, who takes the least direct share in the action and directs his activity most of all to commanding. This relation of the men who command to those who command is what constitutes the essence of the conception called power. Having restored the condition of time under which all events occur, we find that a command is executed only when it is related to a corresponding series of events. Restoring the essential condition of connection between those who command and those who execute, we find that by the very nature of the case, those who command take the smallest part in the action themselves, and that their activity is exclusively directed to commanding. Alright, there we go. Another chapter down. We are inching closer to the finish line. Some people have already finished. I've been seeing a few messages popping up on the A Year of War and Peace subreddit. We're not far off ourselves. A few more days. Now, I'm going to ask a quick request of the listeners. Because the final War and Peace episode is coming up, I would love to have some messages of congratulations from the community. So what I'm requesting is either find on the subreddit, on the Year of War and Peace subreddit, there's a if you find where I post this episode, and I'll put a request in there, and you can just leave a comment on the Reddit page for that. Or the other thing you could do is record your message as an MP3, as a like a voice recording, and send me that, and I'll actually play your message. So this is your chance to have your voice on the final War and Peace episode to say congratulations. So please do keep an eye out for that. This chapter was a bit of a nothing chapter, wasn't it? Just explaining the pyramid structure of power within an army, or military, any organization. Pretty normal kind of stuff. Turtle Vader said, in previous chapters, Tolstoy critiques the great man lens of history, but in this chapter he implicitly states that power is defined by the ability to give orders and have those orders carried out. Do you think this is contradictory? It is a bit, isn't it? He seems a bit all over the shop with these. I don't know, it's one of those arguments where he's just covering all bases. And, you know, you can't... I don't know. He's like arguing against himself, really, here, isn't he? Turtle Vader also asked, what is Tolstoy getting at with his description of people giving orders but not participating in the actions they order? I don't know. Was he trying to sort of say that they're like... Was he trying to diminish their role as leaders? Saying that, you know, all the hard work is done by the soldiers? I'm not sure. If he was saying that, he was saying it gently. Libby Stitch said, this felt like a chapter in stating the bleeding obvious. Anyone who's worked in a large organization recognizes that those at the top don't do the same grunt work as those at the bottom. It's a different job. Yeah, it is a different job. What happens as you move up a corporate ladder or any kind of organization is you take on responsibility, right? So if you're in a team and your team fails, it's not... it's the responsibility of the team's boss, the team's manager, most likely. They're the one who will take the fall, right? And I'm sure they'll hand it on down to the people within the team who aren't pulling their weight. But ultimately, it's them whose reputation is on the line and whose job is on the line. And as you move up and up the ladder, the corporate ladder, or the whatever ladder, the military ladder, those people take on more and more and more responsibility. So that's why you get paid more, and that's why you have more power, is because people don't want to be responsible for things. People don't want to be... they don't mind being part of a massive operation, right? No one minds. That's actually kind of exciting to be part of a huge operation. But to be the person who gets the blame if the operation fails... People don't like that. People don't like that kind of responsibility. So that's why as you go up, those people are well, they're getting paid more, basically, and they're getting celebrated more, and they have more power. Libby Stitch also said there's some interesting thoughts relating to determinism earlier in the chapter, how every decision made is reliant on every decision and action that has come before it. I remember at the start of the year there was some discussion about Pierre and his story relating to ideas of free will versus determinism. I don't really remember Pierre making many decisions. He was just sort of swept along through events. At times he reminded me of Forrest Gump with his ability to be at a key point in military history by accident. He was, I think early on especially, he was just swept along, but towards the end he made decisions. And he made them kind of on a whim. And there was much logic behind him, but he kind of knew, this is what I feel like I have to do. And he might not have known why, but it was him, it was his decision to go and do that thing. And I think he was just kind of following his gut instincts a lot of the time. And I think in the end of the day, it kind of led him to the right place. Maybe not in the best route to get to the right place, but it certainly... No, he turned out all right. Now, I know I've been talking about Christmas for about 3 episodes in a row, but I feel like it's the 26th of December here. But that means it's Christmas Day in America. So I just wanted to say Merry Christmas to the American listeners. If you are listening to this episode on Christmas, Merry Christmas. I hope it's awesome. A lot of Christmas gear going on in this last few episodes. I'm all Christmased out, to be honest. I've just been to like Boxing Day sales and things today, and we went, me and my brother, we took the band's kitty. So our band, we don't make much money, but we do gigs and we, you know, we get a couple of $100 here and there, and we'd saved it up, and there was a music store in Melbourne which was liquidating and Boxing Day sales on the same day. They were liquidating on Boxing Day, so it was like a sale times another sale. It was the a sale squared. What am I saying? Anyway, we went because we were looking on. They were posting things on their Facebook page, this music store, and we were just seeing these prices and saying, "Oh my god." So we went and, we did pretty well. We did pretty damn well. We got a few things that we really needed. My brother, he spent his, a little chunk of his Christmas bonus that he got from work as well. And we left the store, let's just say we had to carry a lot of heavy stuff to the car on the way out of the store. I don't know, but it's exciting, but it's also kind of exhausting, right? Like, I just feel like the last few days have just been this whirlwind of family and gifts and giving and eating and shopping and all this stuff. So I'm ready to chill out on the couch for a couple of days. All right. I think that's going to do us for today. Do go and find the post for this episode on the A Year of War and Peace subreddit and leave your well wishes and your congratulation messages in the post. Oh, I better clock off because I'm getting very tongue-tied. It seems I can barely even make a sentence happen out of my own face. Okay. Thank you for listening. See you tomorrow.